forum for new thoughts and fresh ideas, a place to learn and an opportunity to express yourself. Get involved with our newsmakers and our newsbreakers of today and tomorrow. Talk Radio invites your participation. Talk Radio is
Ray Dream.
And good morning, everyone. It's that time of the year again for our annual Shortwave and DX special show. It's become an annual affair, and there's a lot doing on the shortwave bands today. In fact, according to the Wall Street Journal, shortwave receiver sales are up 50% over last year. And also, shortwave audiences are expected to grow from 4% currently to about 20% of the population in this country within 15 years. Now, that's a startling statement, and a man who should know quite a bit about that is on the phone right now, and we're going to check in with him. His name is George Jacobs. I want to say, too, that we have in the studio Stuart McKenzie. He's president of the American Shortwave Listeners Club, and Steve Miller, president of Radio West. You two gentlemen, glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
All right, let's go to New York City and say hello now to a man who is responsible for a lot of the stations on the air. He was chief engineer for the Voice of America for more years than I care to remember. Let's go now to New York City and say hello to Mr. George Jacobs. Good morning, George.
Hey, good morning, Ray, from a very, very snowy New York City.
Yes, indeed. It's exciting things on the shortwave band today because we're seeing a lot of activity, and a lot of it is due to your great engineering. You put the station for the Christian Science Monitor on the air earlier this year. You did the consulting work for a new station about to go on the air in Salt Lake City, a commercial station, KUSW. Tell us more about your feelings where shortwave is going.
Hey, by the way, KUSW is on the air now. That's the latest one we put on.
It is on the air?
It's on the air. It sure is.
Oh, when did they go on?
They started regular operation about a week ago.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to check the frequencies.
Very good programming. Well, I think you just about summed it up. It's growing all over the world. Perhaps it's growing much faster now in this country than it had in the years before. The private sector, for one reason or another, either entrepreneurial or for religious reasons or whatever, has finally seen the advantages of shortwave, and we have, I believe, now 14 different broadcasting organizations in this country, non-government, aside from the Voice of America, on the air, on the shortwave bands. All told, throughout the world, I think shortwave broadcasting is taking place in about 112 countries. At the last count, there were over 1,600 transmitters on the air every day on the shortwave bands.
And we're talking about powers that go now, an average power of anywhere from 100 kilowatts to 500 kilowatts.
Yeah, there are more and more 500 kilowatt transmitters on the air. Those are the real super giants. We have one private sector one in this country, WCSN in Maine, Christian Science Monitor Syndicate Station. Two more 500s are being built by the Christian Science Monitor Syndicate. In
one is going on the air, somewhere in the southern United States, right?
Yeah, they broke ground just before Christmas in western South Carolina.
Uh-huh. And they'll be beaming, to Central and South America?
Central South America, yes, and also to Canada and the Caribbean, North mm-hmm. America.
Then they also have a station that they acquired and are upgrading in Saipan, right?
That's right. This will give them a worldwide coverage in about 2 years.
Well, why would someone want to listen to shortwave rather than the AM band? That's one of the things we have to ask.
I think the real answer is, why does someone want to listen to radio? Shortwave it brings another dimension in that it adds a foreign flair. Why do people want to eat foreign food? Why do we like French food, Italian food? It's something different. The entertainment is there. The added thrill of hearing something that's further away. Some parts of our country are not served by a large number of AM or FM stations. One can tune in, actually, on the shortwave bands. One can hear more foreign stations than local AM or FM stations. Oh, it's still in a over very vast regions of our country, outside, of course, of the very, very large cities.
Let me tell you an example. In the western United States, during the daytime, there are vast stretches that there is no daytime reception.
And when our shot to the moon was in progress, I was traveling, and I had a shortwave set up in my car with a converter, and I was able to hear, not see, but hear the landing on the moon, thanks to AFRTS, Voice of America, and assorted other stations around the world that were carrying the broadcast. I would have never heard it if it had not been for shortwave.
Well, that's true. And when I travel, I do the same thing. I was in Colorado recently, I'd say Boulder, Colorado, actually. We went a little further up, and we were able to, by count, we were able to hear about 78 shortwave stations and a total of about 14 on medium wave and FM. Also, it does add that little extra dimension. The shortwave audience is a pretty varied group. You have a lot of hobbyists on shortwave, people who just get a kick out of listening to stations far away and actually collect as many foreign stations heard as they can get. You have the serious listener who wants to hear another point of view from either directly from the BBC or Radio Moscow or Radio Beijing. You have those who actually are entertained by shortwave in the areas where a medium and FM coverage is not very good. And all in all, this is beginning to add up to a sizable number, not only throughout the world, but in this country. The United States was one of the few countries where shortwave radio never took hold. In many other parts of the world, in more undeveloped areas of the world, the fastest and cheapest way of getting a national network is by shortwave. And in many countries in South America and Southeast Asia and Africa, you find that the national radio is actually shortwave. It's supplemented in the large cities by AM and FM.
Well, I must admit that before I do my nightly show here on talk radio, I always take a listen to the BBC for a couple of hours. They have great news shows, as you know, and news in depth. And even what's happening in tomorrow morning's British newspapers. So I always want to listen to what news they have, because they have perhaps the greatest news gathering service anywhere in the world.
They do, but I must say, and of course, one might say mine is not an unbiased view, the Christian Science Monitor is one of the world's greatest newspapers with a tremendous news gathering, independent news gathering.
I certainly agree with you, and I listen to them, but unfortunately, out on the West Coast, we get only the back end of the beam.
That's true, right. That should improve when they start broadcasting to Canada in a year.
Yeah.
But they're getting a tremendous number of listeners throughout the world because of the popularity of the Monitor newspaper itself. They don't like to use the term. I, as a layman in that field, will use it. It's the Monitor of the air, although they're quite independent about it. The programs are produced by radio people, and as you so well know, There's a difference between print media and radio media. You can bridge the gap easy enough.
And I can tell you, from what I've heard, it's a class act. they do a beautiful job.
Yeah, they do. And, my heart is still with the Voice of America, having been there 33 years. But
33 years with the Voice.
Well, I left in 1980, but I was there for 33 years.
You must feel excited about the expansion and modernization going on.
Yes, I am, and I'm somewhat involved in that too, actually. But the signals that I get, the messages that I get from listeners overseas, friends of mine, as you know, as much as we like listening to the VOA or the BBC, or just for that matter, those who listen to radio in Moscow, we really appreciate WCSN, because we feel that we're hearing the same news that you're reading in your newspaper back there. It's not government-owned. It's not government-processed. It's free press.
All right. George, would you hold on a second, please? We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Right.
We have George Jacobs on the phone from New York City. George Jacobs is a consulting engineer, and he's perhaps the most renowned consulting engineer in shortwave for 33 years, the chief engineer for the Voice of America. On the phone from New York City, Mr. George Jacobs, renowned consulting radio engineer, and for 33 years, the driving force, chief engineer behind the Voice of America. George, would you tell our listeners what the future is for shortwave radio? What do you think is the future? Is it going to be commercially viable?
Well, the votes aren't in on that one yet, Ray. We have two entrepreneurial or commercial stations on the air today in the United States, a shortwave, and perhaps a third. One of them is WRNO, who led the parade and was the first to come on the air in...
That's down in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's down in New Orleans. I like to say my post-retirement period. When I retired from The Voice, went into private practice, I began encouraging the private sector to go into shortwave broadcasting. WRNO was the first that we got on in that period. The KUSW, Salt Lake City, which came on the air last week, is the second. WRNO has operated in the black from the very beginning. KUSW has got quite a drive, a private sector drive behind it, and I suspect it'll do well. The answer to your question will really come out when we see how KUSW goes. Now, WCSN is not a religious station, no more so than the Christian Science Monitor is a religious newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
They're more a public service station. One of the tenets of the church that supports the paper and the radio station are such that their mission is to provide this sort of service to the people of the world. So they're carrying out their religious beliefs by providing a broadcasting service in the newspaper, and they don't ask any compensation in return. Most of the other stations that are on the air, the other 10 or 9 or 10 stations, are religious stations. The rebirth of missionary work by radio, it replaces the old missionary work in the field very conveniently. I think the answer to your question, how economically feasible it is, will come with what we see the results of KUSW. And we should know that. Next year, when you hopefully interview me again, we ought to be able to give you that answer with some good facts and figures.
Yes, next year we will be interviewing you again. George, we've seen quite a dramatic change in the size of shortwave receivers. 30 years ago, we were talking about huge sets in order to pick up shortwave broadcasts with long antennas, that sort of thing. I still have my National 173 at home. These were very large receivers, and they were complicated for the average individual. Today, we have receivers that are the size of a paperback book, and they're very efficient with a pull-up antenna, and you've got the world, and very easy to tune in, just like any other radio station. Just press a button, and there it is.
Now, that's adding to the popularity of shortwave, and I think that was what was behind the Wall Street Journal article that you quoted earlier in the broadcast. And you have to add one other thing. They're coming down in price now, where they're getting into a price range that more and more people can afford. And it's the new technique in these shortwave radios, the compactness, the easiness to tune. The circuitry is so much better than we had 10, 15, 20 years ago. That's adding to the popularity of a shortwave broadcast.
So in essence...
You have to remember that all of these shortwave receivers also tune AM, FM, and many of them are capable of FM stereo as well, so that you've got a radio, an all-purpose radio, for not too much more than you would pay for a good small radio to begin with.
I remember here a few months ago when Secretary of State George Shultz was traveling in China. He listened to a speech by President Reagan. I don't know if it was the State of the Union or whatever it was. He listened to a very important speech while traveling on a train with his little portable shortwave radio in China.
Yeah, we have stories of that all the time. Even I can tell you one that's even closer to home here. I'm not much of a football fan. I hope I've got the right team. It's the New Orleans Saints.
Yes, right.
A great team, I understand. And they're covered locally in New Orleans, and WRNO has got the rights to broadcast a shortwave. And we figured out that the potential audience, and very likely in many cases the actual audience, to WRNO, taking into account its footprint over North America and beyond, was probably more people listening on shortwave than might have been listening in the city of New Orleans locally.
Isn't that amazing? Well, these are exciting days for those who've been heralding the idea of shortwave international broadcasting. And, George, you're one of the greats in the business, and thanks for being with us.
Well, we'll stand by here and listen to the rest of your broadcast.
All right, very good. Thank you, George.
Right.
All right, bye.
Bye, Ray.
All right. That's George Jacobs. He is a giant in the shortwave business. There's no one quite like him. He is a shortwave engineering consultant with his own firm, headquartered in Silver Spring, Maryland, and he was for 33 years the chief engineer for the Voice of America. Lindsay in the studio, who heads the American Shortwave Listeners Club, and Steve Miller, president of Radio West. And here's a man that is no stranger to Southern California audiences, well-known now in Colorado. In fact, he has a show just before this show arrives on KOA that broadcasts our program in Denver, Colorado. He's a former program director of that station, Jim Hawthorne. Good morning, Jim.
Well, Ray, I tell you, I waited a year to have some more information on SWL and DXing, and now I'm here, and it is such a pleasure to get on the phone and talk to you about it. I got a lot of questions.
I have a lot of questions, it goes back to the days that you were at the old KXLA in Paso Hogan.
Sure.
How did you come up with this name Hogan, with the Hogan twanger?
Started in high school with me here in Denver. I grew up here, and I didn't want to be like everybody else, so I started calling people Larry Hogan. So who's he? You know, well, they would never know his real name. Or I would say, I would address the teacher, Mrs. Hogan, could you tell me about... And she would get on with the answer and say, what did you call me? And so I carried it through to Paso Hogan and a variety of different uses of the word.
What was your little dog's name, Skippy?
Skippy. Well, Skippy was a real person. He said, hello, Hartshorn, how are you? Good to see you again. I say, hello, Skippy. And then I had Scrappy, who was a piece of cellophane that I would ruffle as I talked to, and then it would answer you. Well, something like this now. I say, hi, how are you, Scrappy? Now, did you hear what Scrappy said? This is fine. Say hello to Ray. I interpreted for him.
Well, it was exciting broadcasting in those days, Jim, and you're a legendary hero to a lot of us. Jim, you've been listening to shortwave how long?
I started with an SX-42 Hallicrafters, which I think designates it for the early 40s, maybe 40, 41, or 42. I saved my money, put it together, and I sat down, and the first thing I heard was Radio Moscow, even at that time in English. And just flipped the dial, and I was hooked from then on. Now that maybe have been preceded by me being an AM SWL.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall hearing in my car. My car radio was far better than one I had in the house, so I used to go outside and freeze in cold weather and listen. This is in Denver, not in Southern Cal.
Yeah.
This is the time I would hear all of the shows all over the United States from radio, from 50 kilowatt stations, and of course WLW Cincinnati.
Sure.
Million watts.
How has shortwave helped you as a broadcaster, Jim?
Well, I feel that it gives me a background that I would never have from any place else. For instance, I get my morning news at 6 o'clock on the BBC on my radio. It's on my push-button shortwave. I just reach over and flip it. And I hear the BBC and their 24 hours follow-up, as they call it.
Yeah.
And that sets it for me, and then I listen... obviously to our station, to KOA, and I get the update on everything there. But I feel that what I hear on shortwave gives me little insights into things that you don't get elsewhere.
You have a show just preceding this show on KOA now. It's called what, The Theater of the Mind?
Theater of the Mind, the Midnight Theater of the Mind. And we feature radio shows from the past, like tonight was the Jack Benny Show, Monday Sherlock Holmes, the Hopalong casting, and so forth.
I'm going to have to tune it in.
Oh, it's a great show. You can hear it in L.A.
I know.
And it goes, of course, you're on all night, and you would hear from people that way. You're right.
Jim, it's good talking with you, and I hope we get together sometime soon.
Well, I look forward to it, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to a lot of people.
Well, take care.
Yeah, take care for you, too.
Bye-bye. Jim Hawthorne, former program director of KOA, has his own show there at midnight, just preceding our show's arrival at 1 a.m. Mountain Time. And he's a legendary broadcaster and has a lot of friends in Southern California, I'll tell you that. We'll be right back. I'm Ray Brain. This is Talk Radio 77, WABC. All right, let's take a call from Ben. Good morning, Ben.
Yes, good morning. Very interesting program.
Now, we have George Jacobs, the former chief engineer for the Voice of America, on the line, and he will answer any questions if you have anything for him.
Oh, I could take over the rest of the show, but I've got four ultra quickies, and we'll just see how they go. Number one, how much would it cost, just in terms of gear, to set up a station that would, say, cover 90% of the continental United States?
Well, that's something that I guess George could answer, and we'll see what he has to say about that. George?
Yeah, Ray. That's a good question, and the type of station that you can put up here is governed by the rules and the regulations of the Federal Communications Commission. First off, as strange as it can seem, you cannot use shortwave to broadcast directly to a U.S. audience.
You have to beam to Canada.
You have to beam at a foreign point. If the footprint falls on the United States, that's perfectly okay, but you have to show a foreign point. Also, you have to have at least 50 kilowatts. The station has got to have a transmitter power of at least 50 kilowatts and a directional antenna pointed at a foreign source. Now, that source can be Montreal or Vancouver, but it also can be any other place in the world. Has got to have at least what they call a 10 decibel gain. And the smallest station, that is the station that would use 50 kilowatts and an antenna that would run about 10 decibels, you're talking about $1 million. It's quite an investment. When you get up to the 500 kilowatt range that WCSN has, for example, and...
That's the Christian Science Monitor station.
Yes, and that 22 dB antenna, you're talking about $5 million plus.
Holy cow. Well, now, when we listen to the Soviet Union on the West Coast, where are they beaming from that we're picking it up, that's letting them broadcast? That's another thing that kind of intrigues me. Where are they broadcasting from when we pick them up in the Western United States?
Well, I would say it's probably from one of three locations. Their schedules vary. You may be hearing them directly from the Soviet Union. That would be the South... western corner of the Soviet Union. They've got big transmitter complexes in the Ukraine, in White Russia. You may be hearing them from Siberia, where they've got some very, very big big complexes. But in all probability, you're hearing their relay through Cuba. They relay through Cuba, and that gives them the strongest, most consistent signal in the United States.
Oh, my gosh. One other thing. Now, what is the penetration in terms of households of being able to pick up shortwave in the United States?
Well, I got to tell you a little story about that. I hope you know who Arbitron is. Arbitron is one of the organizations that measures, just the question you asked, the penetration of homes professionally for radio stations. Their new headquarters is not far from my office in the Maryland suburbs.
And all right, hold on a second, George. Hold on, Ben. This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Brame.
WABC, Talk Radio 77.
We have Ben on the line speaking to George Jacobs. He was inquiring about the cost of a shortwave station. So a minimum cost would be about $1 million to put a 50 kilowatt on the air. And if you're going to put, say, 500,000 watts, we're talking about $5 million. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, what was your other question, Ben?
About how many, what percentage of homes can pick up shortwave in the U.S.?
Well, I was mentioning about Arbitron, and they're not too, they're located in the Maryland suburbs, not far from me. And about 2 months ago, I got a call from them, and they said, hey, look, somebody referred us to you. We understand you're a propagation expert. Can you explain to us how an FM station in New Orleans can be showing up in our studies of listeners in six places, ranging from Seattle, Washington, to New York City?
Right.
I said, how can FM doesn't travel that far, does it? I says, you're right, FM doesn't travel that far. They said, well, but people are showing it in the logs. You see, they hire people who do some kind of a rating, and the rating system shows up in logs. And I said, it's not an FM station, it's a shortwave station, of course, which this person never heard of before. I explained to him about shortwave, and he said, gee, it's showing up all over the United States. I don't think there's enough evidence yet to give you a concrete figure. But when it starts showing up in Arbitron, you know people are listening and the penetration is getting deeper.
Well, it's very interesting, and I appreciate the answers. And, Ray, thank you for being so generous with the time.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. Mr. Jacobs, we'll be right back. George Jacobs standing by to answer your questions. If you want to know anything about the art, the engineering, the propagation, the future of shortwave broadcasting, he is perhaps the expert of experts. Let's take a call now as we go to Dr. Bruce Elding, PhD, publisher of FM Atlas and FM Media. He's in Esko, Minnesota. Good morning, Dr. Elding.
Good morning, Ray. Nice to be on the show.
How cold is it where you are?
I knew you'd ask that. Probably about 15 below right now.
Well, great for DXing on the AM band. I don't know about the FM band. Does the wintertime do anything for you on the FM band?
They say there's a minor skip opening in December usually, but this year I didn't experience one. I get letters from all over, though, and somebody in Indiana and Pennsylvania said they heard South Florida around the 22nd, so it happens, and they mentioned the skip on FM shortwave from New Orleans. It's possible in those six cities you would get the New Orleans station on FM by means of skip, but it doesn't happen too often. You know, maybe during the summer there'd be a flurry of it in the daytime hours, and in the wintertime maybe one day of it, but not every day.
You publish the FM Atlas and FM Media. What do you put in these publications?
Well, I've been accused by some people of starting a controversial campaign to exterminate AM radio. what I've done is just quoted a few people and brought together a few quotations of my own from the 1940s, in which I mentioned how people have foresaw the advent of FM and the taking over of FM, and right now it really has as far as audience is concerned, but those quotations from the 40s said that there would be no AM radio after about 8 or 10 years. Well, obviously AM has outlived those predictions, and all I've been doing is dusting off a few of those quotations.
Well, I think AM radio has its place and a very big place in our society, and it'll do things that FM won't do, as you know, as FM will do things that AM won't do.
That's right.
So they complement each other.
And shortwave, of course, can enhance AM's advantages even more by covering greater distances.
Exactly. Has it ever bothered you that we don't have any domestic shortwave broadcasting as such in this country?
Well, I'm in the northern part of the country here near Duluth, Minnesota, and close to Canada, where we can tune in some of their low-power stations. Like
The CBCs, one in, Montreal? And where's the other one?
The one in Toronto.
Toronto, that's right.
FRX is the most reliable one here. And so we can tune in on our neighboring country of Canada, so it's not too great a loss to us. I don't know, maybe those stations are not receivable well.
Well, we've heard them, but they're not usually, listenable. There's a lot of interference nowadays.
Right.
Well, what would we want to know about the future of FM? Anything new and exciting happening?
Well, a lot of different technologies. I've been following the FMX story. They claim that's the technology that will overcome the handicap of poorer distance when a station goes to stereo. But I have also some reporters who are critical of the technology and say, hey, let's go slow on this because it seems to increase multipath and not be too compatible with existing receivers. And so I've been trying to publish both sides of the story.
Now, a few years ago, they went to vertical and lateral polarization to help car radios. But still, you have a problem when you get behind a cliff, a mountain, a hill, a large building or something like that with dropouts. Is anything going to help that at all?
Yes, I think that there's a technology I'm starting to follow very intensively right now. It's called boosters. Now, they've allowed translators in the past where you can be on a different frequency and carry your program into a different area. And it's kind of controversial because the broadcasting industry is worried that competitors will set up translators in your hometown and bring the same signal that you're providing. But the booster is something else that operates on frequency, and the FCC has just allowed it to be at 20% of the power. So if you're a 100,000-watt station, you could have a 20,000-watt booster sitting in your backyard behind a mountain.
Well, that's interesting. The topography, say, in Los Angeles and other areas of the country where you have mountains, sometimes would lend itself to that. If you are licensed to, say, Los Angeles, the city, and your transmitter is in the city, but you want to also get the San Fernando Valley, which has well over a million people living in it, you've got a little mountain range to cross, and that blocks out your transmitter if it's somewhere located, say, in the west side of Los Angeles.
Right, and I see the advantages being in polarization, that the booster antenna to receive the main signal might be situated vertically, because you mentioned the two polarizations,
mm-hmm.
and the one that sprays out the signal into the valley might be horizontal to minimize the interaction between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could safely broadcast the two signals without a whole lot of hash resulting.
Well, who reads your publications, FM Atlas and FM Media?
Well, probably hobbyists like who are listening to this show, broadcasters, and travelers. And my FM Atlas right now is out of print, but I'm in a couple of weeks going to be sending to the printer a brand new copy for a brand new edition, the 11th edition, 1988.
And it gives all the stations, frequencies, power, and that sort of thing?
Right. In fact, I just announced that people can advance order it at 10:50 with postage, so I even set the price. It's a dollar more than last year, but it's 176 pages as opposed to 164 for the older edition, so I think they'll get their money's worth.
All right, what's your address?
Box 24, Adolph, A-D-O-L-P-H, Minnesota, 55701.
Very good. I appreciate your being with us, and good morning to you.
Well, thank you.
All right, goodbye now.
Bye.
All right, that was Dr. Bruce Elving, Ph.D., publisher of FM Atlas and FM Media. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more phone calls. George Jacobs is standing by in case you have a question for him.
The front of the socialist countries. He told a rally on Sunday that foreign intelligence and propaganda services had noticeably been stepping up activities against Czechoslovakia recently. President Svoboda stressed the great role played by the International Meeting of Communist and Workers' Parties in Moscow last June in the struggle against imperialist designs.
All right, that was during the Prague Spring in Czechoslovakia when Radio Moscow was doing its thing. And shortly after, of course, came the invasion, and if you were listening in those days, it became very, very strident, to say the least. All right, let's take a call. We have Frank on the phone from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Frank.
Yeah, good morning. And I'd like to thank you for the guys running the program. I think this is really great. I've been in the hobby over 20 years, and I have a degree in broadcasting.
You have a degree in broadcasting?
Yeah, I was going to mention one of the things, and they were talking about publicizing shortwave. And one of the problems that I ran into when I was in college is, you know, when they teach international broadcasting classes, that most of the universities that I've talked to people who've been at, or like the one that I was at,
mm-hmm.
they basically ignore it. In fact, they even downplay it.
Downplay shortwave?
Yeah, very strongly. The professor that I had, I was told, was one of the top 10 experts in the United States in international broadcasting. And when I tried to discuss shortwave in the class, it was like, well, it's irrelevant. It doesn't have any meaning here, and nobody listens to it.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's get a little input from George Jacobs. George, have you ever run into that before?
I've run into the opposite. You see, living in the Washington, D.C. area, the way, things are looked at differently from the standpoint of international politics than they might be in other parts of the country. And the role of public diplomacy, of which shortwave radio is a very, very important part, is covered in great detail in the Washington area, in George Washington University, in Georgetown, in American University. It's not in the engineering courses, though. It's in the courses in international diplomacy and international politics. And there are courses in there, and as they say, the role of shortwave broadcasting is given quite good coverage in the curricula. Now, when you look at it from in the engineering side of things, shortwave is covered as a part of the radio spectrum, and it's the characteristics of radio propagation at those frequencies are covered, but generally the importance and significance of shortwave broadcasting, the person who called the question in is right. It doesn't get much attention. But in the field of public diplomacy, in the field of international diplomacy, international relations and subjects in that area, it does get very, very good coverage and attention, and it deserves it.
All right, Frank, thank you very much for the call. Let's take another call. We have Fred on the line from Sioux Falls. Good morning, Fred. You're on with Stuart McKenzie, Steve Miller, and George Jacobs. Go ahead.
Well, I have 5 points. I hope I have time to get them all in. First of all, the best source of news to become better informed is on shortwave. Well, what I believe we need is a national newspaper column syndicated in all our papers that reports on news items that are overlooked, like the mercury poisoning in Netherlands from alkaline battery disposal. Right, and the significance of Pete Seeger singing "We Shall Overcome" when Gorbachev and Reagan was signing the peace treaty. I called USA Today about some of the coverage that I was hearing, and they said, "Well, if we need to listen to Radio Moscow, we have access to it." But there were some important things that happened on Radio Moscow that they didn't even report on.
So while the signing was going on, Pete Seeger was singing in Moscow?
We Shall Overcome. Right. Also, I believe we should tell our congressman to listen to shortwave. I told mine that, and he says that we need to be better informed citizens in order to make intelligent decisions.
Well, you know, I think that's a great idea. If more of our congressmen knew what Radio Moscow broadcasts and what they say about us, it might be a different ballgame when it comes to our foreign relations and how, of course, they jam. They hear the stories of jamming, but Mr. Jacobs would know that firsthand. George, what about jamming?
Well, and don't forget over the horizon radar.
No, we're talking about the intentional interference with the reception of broadcasts in this new era of glasnost in relationships between the Soviet Union and the United States. The Soviets have reduced their jamming considerably. In fact, they've...
Hello?
Yes, can you hear George Jacobs, Fred?
I want to ask him about over the horizon radar the Air Force is building in South Dakota also.
Let me take the subject of jamming first. They've terminated their jamming against many broadcasts. They still continue it against Radio Liberty, and they continue it against Coal Israel for whatever political reasons. Their own reasons, and I don't know what they are. I think it's a very glaring violation of the free flow of information and human rights, for that matter, depriving people of listening to what they want to listen to. But the situation is easing, and there was much disgust between Gorbachev and President Reagan, and among the items discussed, and this got pretty good coverage in the newspapers, was the desire of both countries to open up new avenues of broadcasting directly from the country to peoples of the other country. And I think you may have seen some of the bridge programs that have taken place on public television.
Do you think that we'll ever hear Radio Moscow on the AM band as sanctioned by the United States?
It's heading in that direction, Ray.
I'm all for it. I think people should hear what they say.
Same thing. I'm optimistic that it's going to happen, and it's heading in that direction.
Very good. Okay, now, Fred, you wanted to know about over-the-horizon radar, which the hams call the woodpecker.
Okay, the American version is called I don't know what it's called, but they're building one in South Dakota, and it threatens to wipe out shortwave listening here in South Dakota. I'd like to find out how people in New England are coping with the one that's being used in Maine.
As far as I know, the one in Maine is not causing any great deal of concern. These are other uses that are made of the shortwave bands, and yes, they could threaten shortwave listening. I think there's a bigger threat coming up that we ought to be aware of, and that's what the commission calls the Part 15 rules. These are the rules that allow devices to be manufactured that use radio waves to control other devices. The new rules that the FCC are contemplating, they've asked for comment on them, and I hope that every shortwave listener and radio amateur comments on them, could open up the possibility of really, really causing severe interference to reception, because it would allow these devices to broadcast a signal of what's called 30 microvolts per meter up to about 30 feet away. That means someone operating one of these things, and it can be a computer, a radio link, or something that controls something automatically in the house next door to you or in the apartment next door to you, might wipe out your radio reception. And that's something to be more concerned about than over-the-horizon radar. The people who operate over-the-horizon radar in this country, and more recently now in the Soviet Union, have taken technical means to reduce the interference considerably. The woodpecker doesn't interfere as much now as it did 5 years ago. And that, by the way, came about because of worldwide complaints by shortwave listeners and radio amateurs.
It would wipe out a whole series of frequencies. It was very broad-banded.
Yeah, I think, though, that these devices that the commission is considering licensing now could do more harm because they could, these are the devices that control your lights, going
right
off and this sort of thing. If they radiate up to 30 feet, there's going to be a lot of radiation outside of one's own house or apartment into his neighbors. And if the neighbor happens to have a shortwave receiver, I'm getting that problem right now in my own house from a computer next door to me.
That must drive you crazy.
Well, it distracts me a lot from shortwave listening during the
I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, hold on, George. And thanks for the call, Fred.
I'm Ray Brehm here on Talk Radio 77, WABC, New York.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Brehm, and we have Stuart McKenzie in the studio. He's president of the American Shortwave Listeners Club, headquartered in Huntington Beach, California. Steve Miller, president of Radio West. He deals in shortwave radios and does a lot of mail order. And on the phone from New York City, the former chief engineer of the Voice of America and a shortwave engineering consultant having his own firm and has put a couple of new shortwave stations on the air, George Jacobs. Now we have this, and see if you can recognize this.
This is Radio Canada International calling from Montreal.
Ici Radio Canada.
This is Canada.
Calling the countries of the Caribbean and the United States of America.
That's our neighbor to the north, and of course, they put in a very good signal to North America. They've cut down their transmissions, though. Stuart, why is that?
I believe that they now are doing some relay broadcasting for other countries.
Including Radio Japan.
Radio Japan is one of their newest ones. And they are shifting a lot of their transmissions to the Northern Territories.
Mm. Well, I missed their broadcasts during the weekdays to North America.
Right.
Because I was able to catch up on the Canadian news. George Jacobs, more and more stations around the world are working out swaps. For instance, Korea. No, not Korea. Radio Japan and the Voice of Free Korea. Taiwan, they're doing that, aren't they?
Yes, I think that's, if you're an optimist about the coming world, I think that's a good sign. More and more countries are doing it, countries that you wouldn't even think of before. Radio Beijing is relaying through a West African country, very strong signals now here in the States where you could hardly hear them before. The Republic of China, Taiwan Radio is being relayed through a WIFR station located in Okeechobee, Florida. Radio Japan is coming from Sackville now through the international service.
And that's why we don't hear Radio Canada anymore during the weekdays.
Well, yeah, but they've got some budget problems up there that that they decided to look at pretty seriously and unfortunately take the necessary actions to reduce their deficits and get their budget in line. Radio Canada still is on, and we hear them in the East quite well, as a matter of fact. They've got good programming. But there's more and more of these relays going on, and
these relays, for the most part, are being fed by satellites today, aren't they?
Yes, only by satellite today.
That's all. There's no rebroadcast of a signal.
No, the quality of we rebroadcast programs at the Voice of America and BBC for many years on shortwave, but the quality of a satellite relay compared to a shortwave relay, it just has made shortwave overtaken by technical events.
Now, one of the problems with shortwave propagation is that you try and avoid the poles, mainly in the Northern Hemisphere, of course, the North Pole, or the so-called, what do you call it? The
auroral zone.
The auroral zone. And if you avoid the auroral zone, you get good propagation, better propagation. But if it has to go up over the North Pole or a portion of that area, then you get flutter and you get a dissipation of the signal.
Absolutely right.
And that's why we have a lot of relay stations in the Caribbean. We have Antigua, and we have, of course, the Netherlands and Antilles. One thing that's always sort of confounded me is why there hasn't been a shortwave station put up in Hawaii, because that propagation right near the equator out in the mid-Pacific, you could hit four different continents with that type of a signal, and the propagation would be sensational.
It would be, and there are entrepreneurs giving it some serious thought today. One of the problems is the value of land in Hawaii has increased so much that it's going to take a really big organization to get a station going there, but it's being considered.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Of course, to operate a 500,000-watt station takes a lot of power. I think of HCJB in Quito, Ecuador, one of the pioneer shortwave stations. They had to build their own power plant.
That's true, and in some parts of the world, that's still a limiting factor. Would not be a limiting factor in Hawaii, and it's not a limiting factor in Guam. But Saipan, it is a limiting factor. Until they get a new power station going there, there won't be any 500 kilowatt stations on Saipan. They're limited to 100 by the non-availability of the power.
Hmm. What kind of a power bill would you say that a 500,000 watt station would cost a person? I mean, the power bill would be staggering, I would think.
I'll figure at 10 cents a kilowatt hour, it comes out to be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. That's the biggest overhead expense in a shortwave station.
Is just the power to run it. Amazing. All right, let's take a call, and let's take a call here. We have somebody on the line. Hold on a second here. All right, we have Al on the line. Good morning, Al.
Yeah, what got me interested in this short wave is I read an article in the Times called Radio Town Crier of the Arab World. Very excellent article. And then I had a friend of mine told me about a 2001 Sony. Is that a good unit to purchase?
I'll let Steve Miller talk about radios, and we don't want to talk about name brands and such, but he'll tell you what you ought to have as far as a radio is concerned. And the 2001 is a portable radio, the type that I'm talking about that you ought to take with you. There are many brands. Grundig, there's Panasonic, Swearingen, is it?
ICOM and Japan Radio Corporation also can one. There's quite a few different brands out there. Al, what you should really, there's maybe three things that you really want to look in any receiver. First one would be the digital readout. Years ago, we used to have the analog type readout, and that was frustrating for anybody that even wanted to get into the hobby. That's probably the main thing. The second is selectivity. And by selectivity, we're talking about filtering of the radio from adjacent frequencies. If you have a station that you want to listen to and there's another station on the frequency close to yours, that's going to interfere with your particular listening. You want to make sure that you get a very good filtering system. Most of the receivers now, even the small portables, have adequate sensitivity, and they will perform very, very well with the sunspot increase. You're going to see quite a few stations out there.
Can it work from an apartment? Because that's what I live in.
If you put an antenna close to the window or hanging out the window, and an antenna is just a piece of wire, and it works very, very effectively.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Always take about a 20-foot to 25-foot piece of wire rolled up on a pencil with a couple of alligator clips on each end.
That's the easiest way to do it, and that's the way most of the people are actually listening out there.
And when I go to a hotel or something, it's full of steel, I just clip one end to the curtain rod or something and the other end to my antenna and my little radio. It works beautifully, and it's that simple. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stuart McKenzie in the studio, who's president of American Shortwave Listeners Club. Steve Miller, who is president of Radio West. They deal in radios and mail order. And on the line from New York City, consulting engineer George Jacobs.
I'm Ray Brame. This is Talk Radio 77, WABC.
WABC Talk Radio.
213-879-TALK. That's our number here at Talk Radio. Now, as soon as the phone starts to ring, go ahead and let it ring. We won't answer it until it's your turn. That'll save you some money. 1-213-879-TALK. 1-213-879-8255.
The American people have seen, through the publication of secret Pentagon documents, how from the time of Truman and Eisenhower, U.S. presidents have tricked Congress and the American people about the nature of the imperialist genocidal war in Indochina.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory of America.
Dates that. They don't even use that anymore, but they used that logo for a long time. Radio Havana, Cuba, broadcasting from the free territory of America. All right, let us go now to Brasstown, North Carolina, and Mr. Bob Grove. And good morning, Mr. Grove.
Well, good morning, Ray. I'm trying to figure out whether this is late at night or early in the morning.
Don't try and figure that out. Just leave it the way it is. I don't know. Are you able to hear the signal there in Brasstown? We have an affiliate in Raleigh.
Right. I tried last year during our hookup to do that. Unable to. I had my base station receiver hooked up to a large outside antenna and couldn't. And I tried it with a portable up here this evening and still couldn't. So I guess I'm going to rely on the telephone.
I guess you're going to have to do that. All right. You publish Monitoring Times.
Right.
Now, the reason I have you on the phone is, first of all, it's a great publication.
Thank you.
But a lot of people say, well, I don't know when to tune in and where on the dial, and I just don't know, and I'm at a loss. A lot of people get a radio, you know, as a gift, and this past holiday season, I'm sure there were thousands, if not millions, of shortwave radios under the Christmas tree, and they start tuning around, and they don't know when to listen, because shortwave stations are only on the air for a limited time to a certain area of the world.
Sure.
And they want to know what frequency. Now, you publish every month in Monitoring Times a frequency guide.
We do indeed, and that section is growing by quite legitimately popular demand. We have in order of the time of day, starting with midnight or 0 hours universal.
Now we better go back.
Sure.
In shortwave broadcasting, we use 24-hour time, because otherwise you can get really confused. So we start at 0-100 hours, which is also 2400 hours, and you go from there. So on the West Coast, at 0-100 hours is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That means it's midnight or 0 hours in Greenwich, England, right? And they call it, it used to be called Greenwich Mean Time, but it's now called Coordinated Universal Time.
Mm-hmm, right.
All right, that takes care of that one. So, you publish the time in Universal Coordinated Time.
We do, along with the frequencies of the most commonly heard and many of the least commonly heard stations that are on the air at that time, the frequency, of course, to which they can be tuned, and we are also going to be expanding into an area in there of carrying various program notes as to what types of program material the listener is likely to be able to hear.
Now, these are programs in English.
Yes, right, uh-huh.
Okay, now, let's go over 0-100 hours UTC.
Okay.
You have Kol Israel, and you have the frequencies, 7.4625. You've got, and also 9435.
Right.
The BBC and their various frequencies. Radio Canada International, Radio Korea South, Radio Norway International, Radio New Zealand International, YFR Florida, All India Radio from New Delhi, Armed Forces Radio and Television. You've got AFRTS Far East Network Tokyo, the CBC Northern Quebec, CFCX Montreal, CFRX Toronto. Those are the two 10 kilowatt stations that we talked about earlier with George Jacobs. You've got those in Newfoundland and British Columbia, Falkland Islands. You've got KCBI, Dallas, Texas. The new station just on the air last week in Salt Lake City, KUSW, that's 11.680.
Mm-hmm.
KVOH, that is a rather new station on the air just a few months, right here in Los Angeles, 9495. Radio Australia, Radio Beijing, Radio Havana, Cuba, Radio Moscow, Radio Sofia, Bulgaria, Radio Thailand, Radio Peace and Progress, Singapore. You've got WHRI, Indiana. That's a religious station. WRNO, Worldwide New Orleans. You've got the BBC in England. You've got HCJB, Quito, Ecuador. Radio Belize, Radio Kiev, Radio Canada International, Radio Berlin International, and the Vatican Radio, all being heard in North America at 0100 hours, which is 4 o'clock on the Pacific Coast. It's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right?
Right.
Okay, so what else do you have in the monitoring times?
Well, basically, the philosophy is that there are probably three major areas of most hobby and recreational radio listeners. That is the shortwave listener who likes to intercept various broadcasts, either whether he likes to do some target shooting out there for the rare ones. We call those, of course, the DXers, the DX being the old term for distance and still used, and the of course the straight monitor or listener who enjoys that. We have people also who enjoy utilities, those two-way communicators that populate the spectrum, everything from the radio ham to ship to shore, air to ground, military and federal agencies. We cover their types of communications as well. And finally, for the scanner enthusiast, we have material for their interest as well.
And of course you have a lot of interesting news that anyone who is interested in shortwave would want to get into. For instance, the cover story is on KUSW in Salt Lake City.
Right, surely is.
I like the new format, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, we're finally an honest-to-goodness 8.5 by 11 four-color glossy cover.
How can someone order? What's your mailing address?
Okay, the mailing address is Post Office Box 98, Brasstown, North Carolina, 28902, and it's $16 a year.
All right, hold on. We're speaking with Bob Grove, publisher of Monitoring Times. I'm Ray Brame. This is Talk Radio 77, WABC.
Return to excellence with WABC.
All right, the question was asked, what kind of a receiver should someone start out on? And we were talking about that with George Jacobs. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, so that would be at one extreme. At the other extreme are the receivers that are available under various names. I won't mention them, but you can check in any of their amateur radio outlet stores or radio stores in your neighborhood, chain stores. They sell as cheap as $50 or $60. They don't have digital tuning. They have the old, somewhat old-fashioned dial tuning, although it's still good to have dial tuning even on a digital receiver. Lots of problems with those receivers. DXs would turn their nose down on them, but there are an awful lot of people who want to listen to foreign broadcasts, not as a hobby, but just out of interest.
Mm-hmm. And if you're somewhat serious about it, you probably want to start off with a medium-priced receiver, say around $200 or $250, that has
the range that I would suggest.
And has the frequency readout.
Has the frequency readout. Some of them even have, you can fine-tune them with an old-fashioned dial, so to speak.
Right.
They run in the range of between, I'd say, $175 to $250.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the major manufacturers of TV sets and other appliances make them as well. Most of them are made in Japan. And they're the ones that I generally recommend. Newcomers to shortwave radio that I know have been very, very pleased with it. Now, some of them put on so many extra things, it makes it somewhat complicated for them. But if you get good instructions with the radio, simplified tuning, how to tune it simply, even though you can tune it more sophisticatedly.
Uh-huh.
I find that this works out quite well. One of the, there was some ads recently in the Christian Science Monitor on receivers, and I won't mention it. It wouldn't be fair to mention the person. But he does something that's very, very good. In the case of WCSN anyway, on the digital receiver where you can store about 10 stations, he puts into storage the present schedule of that particular station.
Mm-hmm.
The mailing list, mailing out the schedule changes and telling people how they can change the storage. And that's worked out very well. I think it's a combination of things. And I think that Steve Miller probably could say more about that and provides a similar service. where you not only want to sell the receiver, but it does require a little bit of a backup, a little bit of a communication with the purchaser until he gets to know how to use it and then becomes a shortwave listener.
Very good. Hold on, gentlemen. We're speaking with Stuart McKenzie in the studio of the American Shortwave Listeners Club, Steve Miller, president of Radio West, on the phone from New York City, consulting engineer George Jacobs, and we have Bob Grove on the phone, publisher of Monitoring Times. This is Talk Radio 77 WABC, and I'm Ray Brame. Bob Grove, if you were to pick a radio, would you agree with George Jacobs?
Fully, 100%. As a matter of fact, I even know and won't mention which radio he's talking about for $175 range.
Yes, I just added that to my collection.
That's a good radio.
It's a very good radio.
Don't you wish everybody knew what it was?
Yes. Oh, I tell you, that's all I need is one more shortwave radio.
Yes, the $175, $200 range is where credible quality begins to climb. And then, of course, as you go up through the portables, roughly in the $300 to $400 range, the portables begin to peter out a little bit after that in terms of really what's even available out there, except for some of the luxury imported sets such as those made in Germany. And then the desktop sets begin to pick up in terms of performance versus cost, and you get your cost-effective performance from them generally in the, I'd say, $500 to $800 range. Now, sadly, with the falling value of the dollar against the yen in the international market, we have we who are in the retail business have noted that there's going to be substantial cost increases in these imported receivers across the board. Some have already begun, and we'll see that over the next several months.
So the quicker you buy one, the better.
You betcha.
All right, George Jacobs, when you buy a car in Europe, you most always have a radio in that car that is supplied by the manufacturer that has at least one shortwave band on it, usually the 49-meter band. Are we ever going to see manufacturers put that type of radio in cars?